Am number 113. For those of you who are unaware, the theme of the weekend for Hope number 6 is based on an old television program called The Prisoner, with Patrick McGoohan as number 6. Be seeing you. My talk this morning is Flash sucks for advertisers. Actually, Flash sucks for consumers who cannot download Flash. Advertisers haven't figured that out yet, and so they're still inviting me to websites and then say, oh, download Flash or go away. I hate that. Let's see. The reasons I hate Flash. One, it wastes my time. It rarely has content that I want to see. It doesn't know if I have graphics turned off. It takes forever to download Flash content if you haven't got the resources. And its pop-up box always asks, always trust Macromedia content? Maybe you don't want to. Okay. It wastes my time. You only have to download Flash once, but they keep coming up with new, bloated versions. And then the Flash-enabled content takes forever to load. Some people are still on dial-up. Some advertising people haven't figured that out yet. It keeps moving the picture so that my eye is naturally following it and finds it difficult to break away from it, a technique first used by MTV music videos. I have never forgiven MTV for this. And on a dial-up connection, it seemingly takes forever for a website to start up. Let's see now. It rarely has content I want to see. I'm not looking for the number 31 singular wireless Nextel cup chasing Chevrolet Monte Carlo to zoom around my screen. I want to read Jeff Burton's bio. I want to join his fan club. Why are they wasting my time? Now, your ad is annoying enough as an animated GIF. Now you're inflicting me with Flash as well? I use Yahoo Mail a lot. Why can't Yahoo Mail have a preference for no Flash ads or no animated ads? Because they just take longer to download, especially when I'm on a dial-up. Preferences should ask, what is my connection speed? And if dial-up is checked, it should limit the size of animated GIFs presented to the user. Now, GIFs also have an alt component of width and height. If you include those width and height components, then a table can load while the rest of the document fills in. Otherwise, it has to wait until it loads the graphic so it knows what that width and height are, and then it can display the table. Again, a great waste of time. It doesn't know if I have graphics turned off. Wait a minute. Who would turn graphics off? Well, people whose terminals can't display graphics. I have a picture of a Model 33 teletype here, which unfortunately is not coming up. If you visit my website, CheshireCatalyst.com/flashtalk.html, it will have these graphics in it. Now, besides people who can't display graphics, college students during exam week turn off graphics. But colleges have lots of bandwidth. Yeah, lots of bandwidth for an entire dorm. You ever been in a dorm during exam week? Everybody is hitting the web. That bandwidth gets down to a little sliver. And you don't want the graphics. You want the information content for your studying. So you turn off the graphics. Also, people with links, the text-based web browser, still used by blind users with speech synthesizers. WAP browsers with limited plans on their cell phones. There's a whole other subject where I get invited to visit somebody's website. I try to pick it up on my cell phone because I'm right there in the store. And, oh, sorry, you can't see this website without Flash. Well, there I am in your store trying to see your website so you can sell me more stuff. And I can't get there because you've decided to have Flash. There's also PDA users. Palm Pilots with web browsers on them. And some of them are WAP browsers. They can't handle Flash. I'm sorry, you're not reaching us. It takes forever to download Flash content. Who wants Flash? Well, the advertising agencies, okay? Flash is expensive to develop. So that means that their billings increase. And that's what an ad agency is into, is increasing their billings. Also, you need the fastest processors and video screens to develop it. More billings, because you've got to buy that faster hardware. Then you have to put a copy of that hardware on the decision maker's desk, so that he can see it and say, ooh, how flashy, how eye-catching. You want to waste this guy's time, and you want him to approve the project so you can deploy the flash graphics and get it out there before the public. So advertising agencies love flash. Agency clients are sold on the value of the MTV effect and love the fact that their dancing product will keep the attention of the audience. But for how long? And if you want them back to your website in the future, they got to sit through that thing again and again and again. They don't like it. It irritates them. One rule of advertising, don't irritate the customer. The pop-up box always asks, always trust Macromedia content? There is no box I can check that says, never trust Macromedia content, or never ask me this question again. It could say, never ask me this question again for this version of Flash, or below. And that's fine. When the next version comes out, ask me again. But wait until then, please. Now, who can't use Flash? People laugh about the NASCAR nation, but marketers are chasing them at 200 miles per hour, literally. There are lots of web TVs out there. Web TV users can't use Flash, but maybe they purchase your product. Pepsi is a good example of this. Pepsi is sending me emails all the time, come visit our flashy website. I get there, and yeah, it's flashy, all right, because it's got Flash, but I can't download Flash. When I'm at work, my firewall won't let me do it. When I'm at home, I'm on a dial-up, and it takes forever for content I don't even want because it wastes my time. I want information content, not glitz. Blind users aren't that big a market. Who cares if they're alienated, right? Americans with Disabilities Act may rear its ugly head at some point. You may want to keep that in mind. People behind corporate firewalls, where downloads of any kind are forbidden. Paranoid people who are too afraid of what malware might be hidden in a flash attachment. We hackers here at this conference, we would never think of such a thing, I'm sure. So the question is, what's an advertiser to do? Don't just say, get flash or get gone. Building a non-flash page is billable, too. You can hire on an extra programmer for that. That's billable. If you can find the rules page of a contest, usually it will jump you to a non-flash page where you can actually just fill in the form and enter the contest. That's what you need to do, is have a way of getting the consumer to the contest page so you can get their email address, get them to opt in so you can sell them more stuff. Isn't that what it's all about? So, basically, Flash sucks for advertisers, and sucks is a technical term meaning customer dissatisfaction. You don't want to piss off your customer, so find a way around using Flash and get it out there. Any questions? Yes?
I think for advertisement agency, Flash is easier also to deploy.
The statement is that Flash is easier to deploy for an advertising agency. This is true. Macromedia, which creates and distributes Flash, is now owned by Adobe, and the whole Adobe Acrobat model is to give away viewer software and then sell the development software. And this works very well for Flash. From that standpoint, the fact that Flash is eye candy, can attract the eye of the decision makers, is another good reason from the agency standpoint. But when it comes to the consumer, you're irritating consumers with it. And you don't want to irritate consumers because they may just walk away from you at that point. And that's not what you want. Yes? Oh, we got a microphone for questions. Go ahead. But microphone's check. Not working yet.
Check, check.
Okay, there we go.
So why not just have Gopher instead of the web? Isn't HTML too whiz-bang? Like, shouldn't we just have text for everything then?
Well,
I'm just playing the devil's advocate here.
Oh, that's fine. Text for everything is fine. And, in fact, when you have a graphic, do have an alt tag on saying what the graphic is for those people who do turn off graphics. Gopher is good, but I don't know of anybody who's really programming for Gopher anymore.
Well, what happens when people don't program for HTML anymore and everyone uses Flash, assuming that happens?
Flash still comes in under HTTP, Hypertext Transfer Protocol. So it will still be an HTML-readable page. Should be at any rate.
Okay. I was just curious. Thanks.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you. At this point, I'd like to introduce my friend Jerry Green, who will bring up the next part of our presentation here. Okay, let's see now. And yeah.
It's in the drive. That's
which button?
Oh, we gotta go back.
Oh, okay.
We gotta go way back first. Let me take care of that. Yeah, right. Hit the top button.
Is that? Can you get a full screen?
Yeah. No
Very
problem.
Good.
Seem to make the mouse isn't moving.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It's frozen.
The mouse is frozen. Yes, right? Because
okay,
it was
gotcha.
Unplugged.
Okay.
Good morning. I'm Jerry Green. I'd like to introduce myself. I've lived in the Orlando area for approximately 25, 26 years. I'm a transplant cheesehead from Green Bay, Wisconsin. Over the last 10 years, I've been retired. 20-some years before that, I was in computer sales, and 20 years before that, I was in the educational field. I've worked at the college level, district office level, regional service agencies across 37 school districts, in urban city districts, and at high school, middle school, and elementary levels. My presentation today is on the digital divide. There it is. That's okay.
Okay.
I got it. It'll go down.
Let's look at the objectives for this digital divide presentation. First objective is, can we shrink the digital divide faster? It's been shrinking very fast during the last year. In fact, it's made a quite fast acceleration. But there is a large residual group of people that are still left behind in that process. Can people with limited reading skills use the internet? Most of us have long held a bias about limited readers, which we'll explore in this presentation. Can text-to-speech help teach reading? We'll look at this interesting possibility and what text-to-speech has to offer. Who among us are capable and willing to help? This is my primary purpose for this presentation today to the HOPE organization and beyond, hopefully to make contact with other folks that can help in this particular area. Let's define the common understanding of the digital divide. It's basically individuals without access to computer, internet, the capabilities, to use the equipment. Many people are just unaware of it, and a lot more people are fearful of using the internet because they really have fear of failure. Hardware, however, and software and connectivity are not our primary concerns There are other areas that are even of greater concern in this area. A brief aside for a quick hacker's trivia question. What city in the United States was the first city to have free internet access broadband throughout its business district? We'll look for answers at the question area of the presentation. Let's look at trends in the digital divide. How many of us are using e-books, blogs, the wiki of this organization, and the like, cell phones and Blackberries, iPads and PDAs during our commutes back and forth to work, while exercising, and while we're just relaxing? Is remote communication between people increasing or decreasing? We can safely say that there's been a large increase in the spread of between people who are like yourself, who are high-end users, and people who are non-users. We can also safely say that it's shrinking because we have a far less number of individuals who are not using the internet today. Is the publication industry moving into e-books? We'll pursue that slightly and take a look at book usage and the options of the e-book. Is reading required to use the web and e-books? Basically, most of us have a bias on that. We believe that we must be able to read in order to use the internet. And although there are lots of people who have relatively limited reading, there are potentials for us to circumvent that process. Let's have a reality check for a moment about the book. I was on the internet just last week, and I stumbled across this particular group of data. One-third of all high school graduates never read another book the rest of their life. That's pretty awesome. 42% of college graduates never read another book. 58% of adults in the United States never read another book after high school. By the way, this is a way to sneak in some information that wasn't presented in the first one-third, because this counts all the dropout population as well. 80% of United States families did not buy or read a book last year. Wow. 70% of U.S. adults have not been in a bookstore in the last 5 years. 50% of new books are not read to completion. Let's not focus on the people who have chosen not to read books, but instead let's look at the internet and those people who are unable to use it because they cannot read the content on the printed page. We have federal law, Section 508, that deals with the blind and learning disabilities. We have the DAISY Consortium, is a group of publishers that are focused on publication of material in print format, and also 508 has to do with the internet, computers, as well as print. Why is it that we are overlooking other groups who are limited readers, which hinder their learning and employment potential? What groups are they? Should toddlers access the web without being able to read? Should school-aged limited readers be allowed to learn in school until they become proficient readers? Should limited reading adults be allowed to use the web to acquire information and learning to become more productive members of our society? How easy can it become for these groups to access the web? Reading on the internet. People with limited reading skills can easily learn to access information online, but it takes several components to do this. first of all, it takes an introduction. We need to have an orientation, one-on-one, or hopefully, on the net, an interactive type format could be created. It takes an interest. What's interesting is if individuals have an interested topic that they choose themselves, that they really want information about, their interest will propel them into that information. And successfully, they'll be able to seek and learn that information with text-to-speech that will open this closed door of print. This topic will interest learners and be a major benefit to them. What process can we use to make a smooth transition to text-to-speech? Text-to-speech to reading. Text-to-speech enables a new and free way to learn to read. There are gaps in the complete solution. There needs to be software written that ties text-to-speech to the learning process based on phonics. This will, if properly done with learner interest, be self-motivating, self-propelling, and hopefully programmed in a way that it can be self-directing. Online content of interest to the individual provides incentives to continue to the learning process. We will work not only on reading alone, but we will break it into its components, hopefully, beginning with phonics, which is the basic structure, getting into comprehension, oral reading, and other components, skills necessary. It's no small task, but one of the sorest needs. It's like declaring a national priority. On a light side, just as an aside, in contrast to the earlier stats on the use of the book, there exists today on the internet a website that has 300,000 ebooks, which are all free. They were put up there on July 4th, and a very symbolic date in our history of our country. And after August 4th, 100,000 of these books will be left up out there permanently for people to have access and hopefully be able to use text-to-speech to listen to. I'd like to think of text-to-speech as the technology's sleeping giant. Not only text-to-speech, but I'm concerned about voice-in and voice-out, both methods of processing. Let's look at the talking page, becoming self-taught reading. A text-to-speech is one of the elements, but we need to add to that function and facility with the Internet Explorer, Google, throw in some other skills on the Internet like being able to diagram a sentence and using a talking dictionary. And then we would move into voice recognition later, which will allow us to deal with oral reading and writing skills. We mix all this up and throw this into the hopper of a freeform database, a freeform relational database that has components of text, voice, and video. And now we can begin to roll up our sleeves, take off my jacket, and we want to get into the details of this program. As we look up in the first component at 1 o'clock on your diagram here, it's disliking reading. If you have struggled in school with reading or know anybody that has, they know that they become disenchanted with the printed page and the reading process. One of my techniques that I strongly recommend is to get the person to try to use text-to-speech. In order to do this, we really have to manipulate the person by starting to say, well, what are the interest areas that you're most interested in? 2 or 3 or 4 or 5. Tell me what those areas are. I have a technique where I use with Internet Explorer. I go up into the favorites. I put the person's name down up there. Let's grab a couple of names, Adam, Zoe, and Lorraine. Those three names just happen to be the name of my three-year-old grandson and his two-year-old sister and Lauren, who is in her second day of the rest of her life today. She was born yesterday, so I'm a third proud grandfather. We take the topics of the three-year-old, for example, who is capable of listening and understanding a lot of text-to-speech, and we ask him, what are your main interests? And when we do that, he comes up with, I like Bob the Builder, and, oh, I like Thomas the Train. And if you list five or three or whatever number of topic areas that that particular individual, whether they're a child or an adult, under their name, under favorites, and then go out and find five websites on each one of those topics, and then copy those websites over under favorites. Then you take the person out there, and we're going to use text-to-speech. Now, there's many TTSs out there, document readers, page readers, text readers, whatever you want to call them, and there are varying quality levels of pronunciation. The one that I use is one of the largest installation bases in the world. It's out of Canada, and it's called readplease.com. And the neatest part of that, readplease, is that it's free. Now, they have two other versions that you can pay money for. But this free version, you just copy it down to your computer, and then you go into the favorites, pick any one of these websites, take little Adam out there, or any adult out there, hit that particular website, see the print material in front of you, and say, uh-oh, I can't read that. Block it, cut it, paste it into this program. Hit the play button. The play button will allow you to talk at any speed you select. It will allow you also to magnify the print bigger or smaller. It allows you to pick four voices, and it's free. What happens then is, after you do this over a bunch of periods of time, maybe 10, 15, 25, maybe 50 times, the individual gets to see, hey, if I'm an adult and I can't read, and all this print material that's been totally unavailable to me, all of a sudden, I can get access to all of it. That's just an awesome opportunity that's been in the field since I first bought my hobbyist computer in 1978 with voice recognition. The text-to-speech programs came into decent operation about 10 years ago. And in the last 5 years, they've been very acceptable. But they do, in my mind, represent an absolute sleeping giant. As they use this program, they begin to like text-to-speech. People become happy listeners. And then after that, we kind of shift gears a little bit. We offer them a concept that says, well, how would you like to be able to, as a sideline, be able to learn how to read just kind of like a hobby, make it easy and painless? And most people will kind of go along with that, particularly if they can be doing things and learning things that they want to know, not that somebody else gives them as an assignment in the world of learning that most of us have participated in the past. So basically what we do is we grab that information and we say, well, let's see a little demonstration here. We're going to do a demonstration of a word capture. I want you to visualize with me now that we're going out into this freeform database that we put on before, okay? It's like this big holding tank. And we're going to have it structured as you would look at a spreadsheet. So we have a spreadsheet down this side with all the words. And then across the top, we have all these topics. And the topics are going to be, the first column is going to be a new word. And all the words are under that. The second column would be the talking dictionary. Now, out there on the Internet is a free dictionary that if you go into it, there's a phonetic pronunciation. If you touch that with your mouse, it breaks the word in its phonetic parts for you. Very nicely done. The next column I would have hidden in the background, and I'll explain that later, there are 46 phonetic characters that we use when we talk. And I would have the versions of A and E, I, O, U, and their multiple painful ramifications of how we pronounce each one of those listed first, and then I'd have all the individual vowel sounds like B, C, D, okay, all the way through the alphabet, and then at the end of that I'd have the TH and WH and SH and CH and all the others up through 46, okay? Now the person doesn't see that. That's in the background. So we're going to try and capture a word. So we have them going through a page and they listen to the page. And then we say to the person, well, let's see what we can get out of this page from a learning perspective. Now, when we teach reading, we know that the first thing you do is to take advantage of the words that a child has learned from memory visually. That's called sight vocabulary. So we grab this sight vocabulary. In a preschooler or a child in kindergarten and so forth, that's 150 words that they usually acquire. In people that are older and into adulthood, you may have 300, 500, 1,500, or even 1,000 or so, because we learn a lot about traffic words and restaurant names and all that kind of stuff. So we take this page that the learner has listened to the first time, and we say, let's go back over it, and we're going to do something different this time. I want you to look at the beginning of this page, and I want you to look at the page and pick out the first word that you already know. And so they look at the first word, and guess what? It could be the word the. Okay. So they know the word the. Okay, well, sure. You know, virtually almost all people who are illiterate have some degree of basic reading that are limited. So the word does pick. Well, what we do is we need programming here to take what's going on this text-to-speech page now, and that's pretty much why I'm here today, is to seek that kind of horsepower, is we need to take the mouse and move it up and touch the word the, double-click on the left-hand button, and that word will be highlighted. And we need a program that says, take that word now and bold that word, the. And then next program, a search for that page, and find all the other thes and bold them all on the page. And at the bottom, make a total down. And it says that there are 12 or 14 thes on this page. And then you ask the individual, well, let's look up at the top of the page and see what the next word is that you know. Is it and, is it or, whatever, but, you know. And repeat the process over and over again. So you have all these words being bolded and highlighted and tabulated down at the bottom. When you get done with the page, even those with very limited reading capabilities have got 50%, 70% of the page that they already know how to read. And that in itself has a motivating factor. Let's go on to the second page now. We'll turn the page over, and we see on the next page that every word from the first page has been carried over, and so all the thes and ands and buts, they're all highlighted, and they're retabulated on the second page, so we have those numbers also accumulated, okay? Now, we keep doing this until we capture all known words, which are this 150 or 1,000-word vocabulary that they know. Some point in time, we also need to worry about building beyond the sight vocabulary. We take it out into this 44 phonetic area that we're talking about making this spreadsheet. All right? Then the person is basically going to take on new words. Now, there's another segment of the process that we call comprehension in reading. And what we do there is we go back over the page again and listen to it. And this time we say, well, is there anything on this page, because you're interested in this page and it's a topic that you like, is there anything on this page that you want to remember for future reference? And so we can create an external segment of a database that allows them to capture certain elements on that page, put them out in a organized database, give them some kind of label where they can find them again, and help them to comprehend reading, because that's a significant element of reading. Okay, so basically as we do this then, and we keep doing this, sometime in 10 or 15 pages later, and you come to a new page. and the person has a total and they're going on, and all of a sudden they're going to say, oh, I know that word, I know that word, I know that word. At that particular point, you have taken the person who only went there because of content motivation and was something that they were interested in reading. You now have hooked them into this process of reading. They've been swept up into it, and they're acquiring their psych vocabulary. And they say, well, I don't know that word, but that word is about the topic that I'm interested in, so that's a new word, so I want to know that. Well, basically, there are many who want to and need online access, but are limited to reading. Many of them are right here in New York City, in your city and in mine, in our nation and in the English-speaking world. Oh, by the way, one of the reasons why I'm interested in circumventing reading and helping limited readers is because, although I was, as a child, passed on, I basically flunked the second grade, third grade, fourth grade, fifth grade, sixth grade, and seventh grade. At that time, they tested me, and my reading level was that of a second grader. Those years were very painful, okay? But fortunately, I was given another opportunity. I was put into a special class and allowed to repeat the seventh grade. I was able to graduate high school with no more than a fourth grade reading level in the upper half of my class, and devoted my life to the things I talked to you about in the first session, being a special educator for 20 years. Now that I'm retired and can look back at life, and I say, what are the things that I haven't done during my career when I was working that I have time to do now? And this particular mission is very near and dear to my heart. To create this process on the web, I believe, would help many individuals and give them renewed H-O-P-E, hope. Thank you for your time. Your questions are eagerly appreciated for the purposes of recording. Those of you who have time, talent, and care enough to help, please contact me. I'm Jerry Green. My email is gjjgreen37@hotmail.com. My phone number is 407-862-6665. And my cell, it's got two L's there and it shouldn't. My cell number is 407-701-0811. Thank you very much again.
Question?
Do any of you have any relatives or families or friends that have difficulty reading? Yes.
Aging population. My mother-in-law is 85 and having eye trouble.
Yes.
And she's been asking me about text-to-speech and why the Internet hasn't had more options for that, given how
wonderful
powerful the computer seems.
You just grab this free program, readplease.com. If she can't see it, you'll have to copy and paste for her all the websites. There is a version of these programs that you can pay money for. It has two other versions, and there are lots of them. Read Aloud is a common one and many others. And they have charges. You know, this particular program, if you buy the two components, it's up to $130 or so. And basically, that's what we're basically looking at, because she can then go to a website and touch it, and it'll read right on the Internet for her. Okay, and what a neat thing for people with that kind of vision problem.
Well, thank you for that. It's macular degeneration, so she's
getting worse.
I had to get a high contrast keyboard for her first.
Yeah, program magnifies the print, and that's free.
I mean,
that's neat too.
I want to thank you for the early data you had, which is very disturbing.
It sure
sharing
is.
That.
It sure is.
Do you have a sense, I have an idea on this, but do you have a sense how the trends are the last few years? You've been an educator for so many decades.
Well,
it's getting worse.
If we listen to what's going on in the field of education, the process has been slowly crumbling from within and without. Okay? It processes, it crumbles from the parent side of things because parents are indulging their children too early with too much television and computer games and who knows whatever the technology that we've kind of brought into their world, and not really, you know, going into reading and spending time in reading or working even towards that. If parents don't do reading readiness at home and the child gets to school, they will fall behind. And those that fall behind fall off the treadmill of learning because it's set to be generally a lockstep thing. And when you fall off, you're in trouble and you stay in trouble. And by the time you get to middle school, trust me, you hate it. And there's a lot of kids out there. The bottom 20% of education, basically. It's really, you know, it's getting worse. And to help this, the federal government and states are making these national tests. In Florida, we have an FCAT test. And we're testing academic function, okay? We're testing content. And although content is really important, and the kinds of schools that we grew up in were content-based schools, okay? There was some process in our schools, and quite frankly, with the Internet and the access to information with Wi-Fi that we're going to have even more so in the next couple of years, content is not something we have to store here. We have going to have access to that digitally. I mean, I can grab in my pocket and grab an device and say, go on the Internet, and what do I need to find? I'll go get it. I need to know how to find it. I need to know how to evaluate it. And I need to know how to put it to use in my life. Those are processes. And so the need to read, actually, is do you want to hear something scary? I consider it transitory. I don't consider it a long-term need because although Gutenberg made the printing press and we were celebrating these Gutenberg project, which is 35 years of age now, which is pretty awesome in itself, I envision the future will be more a graphic GUI world. The information will be transmitted, and I know we don't like to look at MTV at any of our ages, pretty much. But the content stinks, but the process is the way our mind works. The printed page works way too slow for the capabilities of our human mind. And very few of us in the world that we live in has not focused on developing what's called a photographic mind. When I studied to be a special educator, I learned about two standard deviations on both ends of the scale. And on the gifted side, okay, there are many things that we need to worry about. Is that upside down or not?
No.
That's 10 minutes. Okay. We need to... you got different time schedules here between the two of you. Big time. We really need to be aware that this information that we now transmit to ourselves can be condensed into still images, can be put into minuscule clips, not the size of a commercial, 1, 2, 3 seconds or so. The Chinese explained to us 1,000 years ago, a picture is worth how many words? So we need to learn that message. And the only reason why we haven't had it recently is because we've only had megabytes and gigabytes, and you know, but we have terabytes now and 1,000 times more into petabytes. And we have that all out there now. And it's like having this huge closet in our intellectual house that's empty right now. We will fill that closet, okay? And we've been concerned with dot matrix images, okay? We don't need to have that. We can transmit through raster, and there are conversions from dot matrix into raster. Raster is enormously more efficient in controlling data. And so there's lots of things out there that are yet to be harvested. But the saddest thing is we are falling further and further behind in application, software development and hardware utilization.
Now, I'm worried that your data is pointing into some science fiction stories becoming reality, whether it's a science fiction story of comics without words, my wife's a retired teacher, and she talks with some of the slower students in reading as the Eli, with the talking rings, if you remember from the H.G. Wells book and the movie.
Well,
the rings do the talking, and there is nothing other than, that's where food is, and that's where whatever that library thing is.
Yeah. Well, you know, now with CAT scanning going on and us looking into our brains and seeing what's going on in our brains live while we're thinking, we probably will be seeing, even though I'm almost 70 years old, I potentially can see in my lifetime the ability to find a way to transmit information. Not through our eyes and not through our ears.
Sony has a patent on that was written about in EE Times this past week.
The idea is not information. The idea of life is a process. And learning the process of living, we spend hardly any time in our school systems really developing what we are, who we are, and more importantly, why we are. And so I'm into other things beyond text-to-speech, and I've been developing curriculum and a new concept of the learning environment of the future, and also a way to look at life and discover you as a person, who and what and why.
Thank you,
and
Jerry.
Those bits of communication are...
Before our session ends, may I ask, I think others are interested, what website has the books that were posted July 4th, the e-books?
Oh, it just put down the Gutenberg Project, or, pardon?
Gutenberg.org.
Gutenberg.org,
okay.
Or put down 300,000 e-books, and poof, it'll be there.
Okay. Thank you again.
You bet. Any other questions? Oh, he has one. Yes?
This might be a bit off topic, but I was wondering what your opinion of the No Child Left Behind Act is. The idea of closing a school if it's not successful.
Well, my concept is real simple. I have come from a world that's been built educationally, generally from the top down. No Child Left Behind, and way before that, way back in the 60s when I got my master's degree in exceptional education, we were concerned about going to the bottom and building at the bottom, and in our bottom is exceptionalities of people that are physically, mentally, and emotionally very limited in all kinds of ways. I have learned in my life that those of us that were given a significant challenge in life have an advantage over people that are only given all the positive gifts, because if we are able to overcome instead of succumb, we become very, very strong people, okay, and very driven people. And so the No Child Left Behind thing I support. I'm concerned primarily in this presentation about working with people that are right above that group, okay, this 20% at the bottom that's growing and festering and causing our society enormous problems and expenses.
Thank you.
That ends our session at this time. Jerry and I will be out in the main corridor after the talk for those who want to meet with us. Thanks for coming. Enjoy your convention here in your village. Be seeing you.